Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Kubal. Today, I have a very special guest, Russell Carroll. Russell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent, Daniel. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being flexible. This has been, I keep saying this, people in the audience are probably laughing at me ever since I had a child, right? Like, it's just been, it's been an interesting podcast schedule. So I'm always appreciative when, there's someone I really want to get on, and I'm kind of like a dog with a bone when it comes to certain people and their books. And you're on my 2026 reading list. So I definitely wanted to get you in quicker. Yeah, quicker than, sooner rather than later, and, be able to have the episode come out right before I actually release my 2026 reading list. I'm on vacation after next week. So I'm doing it's a three-part video. I've got like 65 books on there. And then a bonus list if I can get to it in time. But yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you about your writing journey and about your books today. So thank you so much for joining us.
No, thanks for having me. And you're doing us authors a favor, all of us indie authors, by having this great platform where we can come on and talk about our books. We like to talk about our books, at least I do. So I love the opportunity. So thanks. I was more than happy to wait. Happy to be here.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, we'll start right there with that first question there, Russell. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
Oh God, I'd say it's been kind of a roller coaster, right? I mean,
I know that feeling.
I'm guessing a lot of indie authors can kind of experience that or can relate to that, right? Like, I thought I kind of knew what I was getting into. I thought I did some research a couple of years ago when I started this journey, and then you find out that you don't know much of anything. So, like everybody, I was fumbling and stumbling and grabbing on to everybody I could find, different authors, asking different questions, trying to figure out, like, blind man searching around, trying to find my path. But it's gotten a little more smooth this last, 6 or 8 months. I feel like I'm starting to get in a groove. I don't claim to know it all, but it's been fun. It's been challenging. It's been exciting, a lot of ups, some downs, just an overall, but a fun experience. I've had a great time.
Well, that's awesome. I totally understand the roller coaster aspect, though.
Yes.
Yeah. People ask me like, what's going on with yours, Dan? I'm like, oh, I'm just on the roller coaster right now of just realizing that, yeah, I really thought with talking, I made that mistake, right? I thought I had talked to enough authors and friends and, things, and I thought I had prepped stuff enough or written enough or whatever. But yeah, until you hit one of those, like click, 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 you don't really know. So I think that that's an amazing analogy for
Well,
the
even I
journey.
mean, just last night, and well, last couple of days, and even today, earlier today, I made a few minor edits to my book, just changing some of my socials. So I just went in, didn't change the link, didn't change anything, uploaded it to Amazon, fine, but Barnes and Noble got weird and fersnickety, and I uploaded it, and they were giving me error messages, and then they wanted me to upload a cover again, which I did, but for some reason, it aired out. It's just all sorts of little things that don't even have anything to do with writing, right? As an author, it's the stuff like that. I've spent the last like day and a half fighting with Barnes and Noble, and I'm almost there to get it back up again, just because I changed a few of my social handles at the end of my book. It's not even the book itself, right? But those are kind of the challenges that us indie authors face, right? It's just some of that stuff beyond writing.
Well, I was helping my friend Ryan Null, who I had on recently, and helping him update some covers. So if anybody's looking, let me know. I've been doing just some minor things. But yeah, I was like, oh yeah, we're good. I got the dimensions and everything. Yeah, so he sent me the KDP, he sent me Ingram. And then I thought we were all good. And then he uploaded them, where it was like prepped and had all the little red lines in the boxes for the text and stuff. We're good to go. And then he texts me the next day. He goes, yeah, KDP did not like it. So I redid it from scratch, the spine, like literally in the back. Like I think I had to do it a total of 10 times. And then the other one was like a total of 7 times. It was just like not liking it. And then he got a hold of me and was like, oh, I think Ingram's still giving me issues. I'm like, but Ingram was totally fine from the start. Like it was just wild. And like the percentages too of like or like the ratios were not that much smaller for like the
No.
spines for paperback. It was just wild. I'm like, you're probably not like, and we like accounted for My friend's a graphic designer, so I like double checked with him, and we double checked and triple checked the bleeds for both, and I just couldn't believe that there was any issue whatsoever. So I totally get that. It was literally like an all week thing. I think I put in an extra like 8 or 10 hours this week just to try and make sure that they didn't reject anything from him, and then it still happened twice. So I'm just like amazed that yeah, some of those like I said to my wife, I was like, I am so worried about my cover now. And like I did it had it updated from Get Covers, but like my friend and I were like already trying to anticipate some of those problems. And I think what we're going to do is I'm going to extend out a little bit further. I was trying to get like the first week in June. I think we're just going to automatically go and have everything ready to go and live like that first like after 4th of July, like whatever that first Monday is, because otherwise I had a friend where my friend Andrew Johnson, he had an issue where it's like Amazon had released his book, his recent one, The Scorch Hunter, on like KDP, but then it was a different date for like Barnes and Noble. It was just like super weird. So I just feel like everybody's having just like super weird problems that they haven't had in the past. So yeah, I definitely understand that.
It can be crazy. So that's just some of the fun of being an indie author, the challenges.
Do you mind just telling us, because I think that your new socials are really cool. Do you mind just telling us a little bit about that? And maybe if people, this is like people's first time seeing you or hearing you about your new socials.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I've updated it to now almost all of them are DWA Russell. So you can go to TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube are all at DWA Russell. And X wouldn't let me, someone already had DWA Russell. So that's DWA Russell 22. But it's because I have a YouTube channel myself, which I've kind of branded myself the dog walking author. And I've got some videos I put out probably two or three times a week that just kind of started on a whim about a year ago. As I was walking my dogs each morning, I would just take out my iPhone and I would just record myself. And there, as I was recording or walking the dogs, I would start recording, some thought. Usually it was about writing. Mostly it's writing. It's kind of expanded. Sometimes now I'll talk about a movie I've seen, or I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan, so I had some rants during the season about how terrible they were
I
doing and
understand.
Jerry Jones. But it's like, so now I upload it and people seem to enjoy it. I get messages all the time that people find a lot of the things interesting and enjoyable. I try to keep them short, about 2 minutes, 220, something like that. So they're not overly long, something you can consume quickly. And it's just me. So then it's been about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I decided I might as well brand it. So I got some logos made and then now I've
Really
just
cool, by
changed
the
them.
way.
Oh, hey, thank
I
you.
love the logo.
Shout out to Darren Height. That's the artist's name. He designed them for me. And yeah,
Oh,
they were
cool.
fantastic. I think they're pretty eye-catching, kind of like
Oh,
we
yeah.
based them off like street signs. So it kind of like
Super
we're
cool.
preconditioned to look at those kind of things. So yeah, it's fun. So yeah, I'll give you the links and stuff to the YouTube. So anybody who wants to, they can hear the dog walking author.
Well, I just want to, first of all, I think it's a really great idea. I love them. Like I'll see them on like Facebook. Usually I see them on Facebook first because I'm usually, like checking or talking to somebody and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I'm getting the push notifications from YouTube as well, just so you know. So it is working. I know there
Oh,
was
cool.
one I must have missed, and I watched it on YouTube actually when I was sitting at work, waiting for some kids to show up to class and stuff between like lunch or whatever. But I think I've been trying to explain to people. They're like, oh, you're doing an author channel too. I said, yes, I am. I said, I'm not doing, I said, I'm going to put interviews on there. I'm going to throw everything on there. I said, like, why not? Right? Because you can do, like now you can, I can invite myself with one channel to another to collaborate. So now I get two avenues to get, like this type of interview out there. But the nice thing is, I think, is, you're doing something that you're already doing, right? Like walking anyway, and they're not very long. And it is a unique type of style, I think, for people to get to know you. And I think that it's really smart. I've been trying to get a couple of my author friends to do the same. I personally, like my wife and I, we travel a lot. And with my son and I love going to new bookstores. So I'm like, you know what, on my author channel, I'm going to start to just like, you know, check out different bookstores. Like we used to, I used to do a lot of Instagram with it, but I'm going to like go back to doing that again. And maybe even, you know, calling people ahead of time or trying to find somebody that works there. Just do like a, you know, quick, like 3-5 minute video since we're already going there anyway to check out books, you know, like just, I find them interesting. I love going. And then I find a lot of people, you know, that have been to the same bookstore, and you know it's really cool, particularly when it's an indie bookstore. I think you know it's like, did we just become best friends? Like, yes, you know. So, but
No,
I
it's
think it's
fantastic.
just, I always think it's like an interesting and unique idea, and I love that you branded it now. So, I think that I just want to point out to people that it doesn't have to always be, you know, the typical platform like this, or you know, your typical review style, you know, those kind of things. I think those little things to make it unique. You know, I don't know. I think in the long run, it'll really help you out and, you know, get you some different people that maybe you would have gotten before, you know, just doing the typical author stuff. So I think that's really smart on your part.
Well, I hope so. And also, you know, it's, oh, by the way, that's my green cheek Conyer. He's flying around. So if you see him land like he just did, that's what it is. And I have videos of him. And, you know, we have a plethora of pets here, several lizards, two dogs, two birds. And so I'll throw videos of them sometimes on the dog walking channel as well, just as something that's cute. And of course, as we know, we talked about algorithms, right? You know, I can post my video of me talking, walking the dogs, and get a couple hundred views. And I, you know, post the bird bouncing his head and throw up a little rock music behind it for 20 seconds, and it gets 2,000 views, right? I mean, it's just like, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember like which author friend of mine, but she like put it on recently. She's like, yeah, I can't get. She goes, I can get a couple. Yeah, like the same thing, like 70 people to react to this on TikTok. For my book stuff, she goes, but as soon as I put my cat in here, she's like, it's like 3,000 every time.
Yeah, totally. You throw your animal up there and your kid or something like that. Yeah, it's thousands of views. You trying to
That's
sell your
awesome.
book and it's crickets.
Which is wild to me because, like, anytime somebody's like, you know, even remotely like putting up a book, I'm like, what is that? And my wife, she's like, you do that in public too. Like, I try not to be embarrassing about it anymore. But there'll be like somebody like, you know, this woman the other day, this young lady had a book and I was like that. I'm like, my wife, she goes, you can't see, you know, 100 yards down a street sign. She goes, but you could see a fantasy or sci-fi cover coming from anywhere. There we go. I love that
Had to
cover.
do it. Thanks.
That's awesome. All right. So we'll talk now. What genres are you currently writing and why?
Well, I mean, kind of, you know, spoiler, right? You know, the book. So I'm very much epic fantasy, dark, kind of gritty, epic fantasy. You know, I'm kind of the older generation, right? So I grew up reading the books, you know, in the 80s, 90s, you know, late 70s. So for me and my generation, we just called it fantasy. So I'll be honest, I start to struggle with some of all the different subgenres. I don't
Oh,
quite
yeah.
get it. So now sometimes I say I write dark, grim, sword and sorcery, epic fantasies, and I think it covers it all. But it's mostly inspired by my love of playing Dungeons and Dragons when I was a kid. And so these books came out of my love of playing D&D, and actually the two main characters in the book, which would be Vidge and Grim, are me and my best friend's D&D characters from when we were like
Oh, I remember you
teenagers.
saying this on another interview. I don't know if it was with
Yes.
Chris from Bearded Book Beast or Bald and Balding, but I remember you saying that. Yeah, it might have been with Mike and Roe, actually. Yeah, I think that's really
Could have
cool.
been. Yeah, so these are, you know, now they're not campaigns that we played, you know, these are all brand new, unique stories, but the two characters themselves were our D&D characters from, you know, 40 years ago
Oh,
that
that's
I've
cool.
just been thinking about, had been thinking about for years and years until I finally wrote the first book back in 2022, published it in 2024.
Oh, that's awesome. That's super cool. I get that because I have a dark, I've been calling it dark fantasy Yeah, we had a campaign before the pandemic, and it was just so much fun. It was like I was like a skull, like a northern barbarian skull, and then my friend was like this dwarf, who was like a, I don't remember what the subclass was of the rogue, but it was just really cool. And we just got into so much like hijinks. And then my friend was like an elf druid. And then I just threw in a couple extra characters. I was like, this could be just a D&D party fantasy and just like straight. Yeah. And it was just like all has been coming together. It's been really fun. I can't wait to get back to it. But it's fun to write off of those experiences, right? And like, even if it's just the characters, like the personalities themselves, I don't know. It's nice when you already have those like kind of developed. I think it creates a very unique story.
It does, although I have to admit that I have to pull back when I'm writing these characters and make them a little more realistic. Because I admit,
Get that.
when me and my friends played back in the day, I don't know if they use the term anymore, but we called it back in the day, it was Monty Hall type campaigns. So we would be just throwing magic items at our characters, and our characters would be, dripping in gold and whatever. So, by the time our characters were finished, they were basically like, you remember the old Deities and Demigods book?
Oh,
Or
yeah.
yeah,
Yep.
like we would literally sit around with each other and be like, let's flip a page. Oh, okay, Thor comes down now, and we. Oh, okay. Hi, kick Thor's butt. It's like just how crazy they got with power scaling, because we just went off. We started realistic, and then after a few years, it just went crazy.
I get that. I had some like, 'cause like my buddy, he goes, you can't put our, he goes, I go, do you mind? 'Cause I asked, I was like, do you mind if I, put the characters in this book series? And he's like, oh, I think that sounds brilliant. I go, all right. And he goes, but they're really stupid. I said, no, we're stupid. I said, we played them in such a ridiculous way. I said, but I said that I think there's a kernel there where, and I actually came up with a very interesting way of writing book one where I think it's a little bit of a twist based off of like some of the some of that, right? It's like trying to turn them into real characters, with actual depth. So I totally understand that. I've talked to a lot of people on here. Jake Fredinal, actually was another one where he was DMing a lot and for his friends, and then all of a sudden he's like, they're like, hey, you should write, these stories, and then like that's what he's been doing is like from their actual campaigns. But that's what he found too after the first couple drafts. He was like, oh, I was the DM, I can narrate well. He's like, but I had to go back to my friends and be like, so what would you do? Like, you did this in the game, but what would you actually do? But I think that, that ended up helping him like create some more depth. But how what were some ways that you kind of tried to make some things more realistic for them then? Other than not just being a gold or magic item.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so I stripped away all, they don't have in this books, they don't have any magic items, but I tried to set the books kind of at the beginning of their
Smart.
adventurous careers when they get together, because my long-term vision is I'll expand beyond the first trilogy at some point. So I wanted to start them off when they're kind of beginning adventures, if you will, or at the start. So that was one thing. And then I had to kind of give him some flaws, like Vigilante, for example. He has dyslexia. He can't read. That has an impact on his character, his backstory. And he's also very impulsive, kind of hot-headed. Grim is very much, he's a, in my world, they're called Skrons. They're sort of like orc Klingon hybrids, you might say,
Cool. That's awesome.
pretty good, but he's a half Skron. And so I kind of touch on some themes of discrimination, racism, kind of the things he has to, challenges he faces, kind of being an outcast, if you will. So it's very much trying to ground them in some reality, give them real troubles, real problems. Both of them have extremely tough upbringings, lots of conflict between them and their father. So a lot of themes of fathers and sons, especially in the first book, because both of them have issues with fathers that we would call toxic nowadays, or not supportive fathers, if you will. So there's a lot of exploration of that, what it means to be fathers and sons, and how you're influenced by your father, and things like that, brotherhood, loyalty. I go back to the old school. I very much, I like the grim dark, but I kind of feel like we might be at a place where the anti-hero, the grim dark heroes are, I kind of feel like they're getting oversaturated. Like I want to kind
Oh,
of go
yeah.
back to where the heroes were the heroes, and it's okay for a hero to be the good guy, and we can have real villains and real heroes. Everybody doesn't have to be just totally shades of gray. Not that I don't have nuance to my characters, but they harken back to where it's more clear, like this is the bad guy and these are the good guys, and the good guys are trying to do what's right. They may make some mistakes, and the bad guy is doing bad things. They don't all have to be just nebulous shades of gray.
I think that makes total sense. That's what I said to my friend recently. I was reading a character and I was like, oh, I just like this character. He's like, what do you like about him? I was like, he's just a good dude, you know? He tries, you know. I said he's probably too, you know, like too trusting, which is one of the flaws I think that the author did a really good job within the book, right? Yeah. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Or maybe he didn't really believe in himself enough, on a family flaw, or like maybe family history, and that turned into another flaw for him. But then the climax was like, you know, him really getting over those things, and developing as a character in one book, like 300-page book. And I was like, this was awesome. I said it just felt refreshing to, you know, to read like a paladin slash like war priest type of character, you know, who's competent, but also, you know, really struggles. You know, it's like kind of, I'd say if you liked Kaladin Stormblessed, like he, you know, it was like not as depth of like a character like him, but it was like a mini version in like a 300-page book. It was cool. But I totally agree with you. I think it's important to, I don't know, I'm getting a little, yeah, I'm getting a little, I love me some Daredevil, like don't get me wrong, and Punisher, but after a while, it's like, where's Captain America when you need him? Like either him or
Seriously,
Sam. I
and it
loved the new
doesn't.
one. I thought it was awesome, but it was like it was like that good, like yeah, just the good hero.
It doesn't. I mean, Wolverine, Batman, Punisher, they're all great characters. Don't get me wrong, they're fantastic characters. But every once in a while, you just want to see Captain America or Superman, just someone that has hope and. Doing the right thing,
I love the new Superman because of that. I went and I said to my wife, I said, I've seen, you know, every like new Superman, right? After Christopher Reeves, like in the theater. I said, and I'm gonna see this. And my friend had to bail that day, he had a job interview last minute. And my wife, she's like, what are you gonna do? I was like, the little guy's still at daycare. I said, I'm going to this movie. She goes, cool, I'll pick him up. And I was like so happy I went. I was like, oh, I just it was really cool. I felt it was nice to have. Yeah, like a more lighter version, and yeah, like somebody who, you know, really, I don't know, kind of harks back to the reason I love Superman to begin with. I loved Henry Cavill too. I just wasn't a big fan of Zack Snyder's universe. I think it was too dark, and everybody was trying to be the anti-hero. It's like it doesn't work when everybody's trying to be the anti-hero. Like that's why,
And some characters just don't work as Batman works as an
he
anti-hero.
works, yeah.
Superman doesn't really work as an anti-hero. That's not his character.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, it's always interesting when people do new stuff like that. But all right, this is my favorite question to ask authors. So, what is your book Relentless Blades about, and how'd you come up with this idea?
Well, we kind of touched on it. It came from my love of D&D, and where the story, the base core of the story came from is about 20 years ago, it was about 2004. I submitted a story idea to Wizards of the Coast. At the time,
Oh,
they were
cool.
running a
Yep.
competition
Yep. I wrote
for,
a lot about that
this one happened to
for
be
that.
their Eberron campaign setting
Oh, I
that had
love that
just come
setting.
out. And they had this contest. If you win the contest, you could write, I think, the second book in their new series. So I submitted my synopsis and my sample and everything. I didn't win, but I came in whatever they considered the shortlist. So I got some feedback directly from the editor. They said they
Wow.
really liked it. And so it was great. But then I couldn't use it because, and I see, one of the questions you have is world building, right? Well, everything was based in Eberron, the
Yep.
setting, some of the characters, the conflicts were based in that world. So I'm like, I can't use that. And I have no excuse other than to say lazy, you know, I got busy, got married, had kids, whatever. And so the idea just ruminated in my head, but I didn't do anything with it. I would have friends, I'd have my wife, like every few years, you know, hey, what, you know, I talk about writing and they, well, what, you've got this story outline. I'm like, I know, but I don't have a world. I can't use it. And I just wasn't ready. I wasn't up for the task of building a world until a couple of years ago. I finally sat down and said, forget it. I got to build this world first, understand a new world. Then I can adapt parts of this story that work into this new world. And so the synopsis is, so if you say, what is it about? It's kind of Raiders of the Lost Ark meets Gladiator in a fantasy setting. That's Relentless Blades in a nutshell. It's a epic quest, the two, you know, the heroes trying to stop the villains before they can find the artifact that they think is going to bring dragons back to the world. There are no dragons in the world. They think they can do this. The good guys have to chase them. And along the way, they end up as gladiators and all sorts of action and adventure. I'm a big Salvatore fan, love reading all Grist books, Dragonlance. So these books are heavy on the fight scenes. I love writing about the combat. And so a lot of combat. And so that's essentially what the books are about. So if you like Raiders of the Lost Ark, you like Gladiator, put them together in a fantasy world, and that's Relentless Blades.
And that's how you do that, guys. All right, everybody go.
That's it, right there.
And review, and we're done. That contest, though, like I was in eighth grade, so it was right before that. So it must have been 2000. Yeah, it was 2001. I actually remember because September 11th actually happened, fall. So yeah, so 2002. So it was the summer. I was always reading Star Wars. My teachers were great about that in middle school. They're like, yeah, just like, it was way thicker, way more complicated than anybody else was doing. So they just let me go, you know. And then I would get done in a day or two, and then I'd read the classic that everybody else was reading, and then I'd go do the same thing. But I discovered The Hobbit, and then Brian Jack, and then a book called Knight's Word. I always tell people she only wrote two books. I keep forgetting the author's name, but it's WYRD as in Fate. One of the greatest sword and sorcery books I've ever read. It's a shame she didn't do more. And then, yeah, I was in the summer and I was like, yeah, I'm starting to like this fantasy thing. And that's when I actually discovered, Shadowdale, Avatar, trilogy.
Oh yeah.
For Forgotten Realms. And then I was on vacation. I took that. I was playing Diablo at the time, two, and one actually. So I took that. And then we were at the bookstore. I just flew through the ones I had at the library, and my mom's like, hey, like, here's book two, here's book three. So by the end of the week, I was like, it's like a fantasy nerd at that point. But then I remember the next summer, I think it was in one of the books, they talked about the contest. So I just started writing like crazy, but I had that same problem. I had like years of Forgotten Realms stuff. And then I went to college to be an illustrator. And then I went, had a teacher who was just amazing. And he was like, oh, you can do a designing alphabet book. So I literally like designed this like tome, like this magic tome, to have like history in it. And I rewrote all my Forgotten Realms stuff, like fan fiction, essentially for the contest, into like my own setting. I still have to like do some more stuff with it. But it like, I totally agree. It was like difficult. I just let it set aside for probably like a year and a half or two till I was in college. And then I was like, now, then I had like an idea. I still am into martial arts, and yeah, it was like one little idea though allowed me to twist everything. And then I changed names and came up with this massive world. But I totally understand. It's like, it was a huge hurdle. I just had to take a break. I was just reading. I mean, it's like really overwhelming when you have something that is so cool, like Eberron. And then, you know, you're trying to, you know, and you're using, right, everything you have to, like for like the Black Library and stuff, for Warhammer. And I think it's very difficult. I think it's harder than most people think to kind of take those kind of things and make your own, you know, characters and your own world in particular, and make it exciting too. So, because you can't just change the names, right, especially with Eberron, because you still have. Yeah, all that, you know, the war and everything, and yeah, the after effects. I totally get it though. It's It's a lot more complicated than I think a lot of people. I had friends looking at me there, and my brother, like, just do this. I'm like, you guys don't understand the kind of like lift, right? That it requires. So I don't envy you there. But it sounds amazing. I love all of what you just said. And I liked how you explained it too. Like I said, on, you know, your other interviews. So people should definitely check the, you know, my other podcast friends out with Chris from Beard Book Beast, Bald and Balding with Mike and Roe. And it's always interesting for me too, to see you guys on, you know, their, you know, channels as well, cause they ask different questions than I do, which I always find like really cool. Now I'm just curious for the next one. So what were some of your main goals for book two, Ashbound Oaths, in the Prophecies of Zerum?
Well, actually, so for book two, I wanted to kind of challenge myself and expand on themes, because when I wrote book one, Relentless Blades, you know, as a debut author, I had written short stories, but never a full-length novel like this. So I really tried to keep Relentless Blades fairly focused, fairly linear, not to say that it doesn't have nuance and excitement, but I tried to keep the story. Like if you think of Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? It's Indiana Jones, and you're following him where he goes. It's not branching off into a bunch of different stuff. So that was kind of like, okay, let me keep the focus centrally on these. So it's only really has the two main character points of view. They're on their quest. You're kind of following them the whole way through. Because I wanted to not bite off more than I could chew for a first book. Okay. And I thought, let me keep the scope, you know, fairly contained. But so for the second book, I knew, okay, Ashbound Oaths, I need to expand it out. And I wanted to really get in the heads of some of the other characters. So there's some of the characters that are more secondary characters in Relentless Blades, like Everly, who's a priestess of Paragons of Retribution. They're one of the factions in the book. I've got Freylich and Alindra. She's a mystic. He's a Tiddler, which is kind of a halfling or a hobbit type race. And so they were secondary characters, important, but secondary. So when we get into Ashbound Oaths, I really especially wanted to try writing from a female character's point of view. So Everly has a lot of expanded points of view. And then I wanted also to get in the mind of this guy right here, Rorghast. He is basically my Darth Vader of the series, if you will. So I wanted to dive into his mind, and without trying to give too many spoilers for Relentless Blades, Ashbound Oaths for him explores what happens. You know, we always watch the movies and the heroes win or they achieve their objective, and maybe the villain is defeated or whatever, but what happens to the villain after that? So I thought about like Star Wars, like what happened when Darth Vader spun off in his TIE fighter between Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back? I don't think the Emperor patted him on the back and said, oh, you let the Death Star get blown up, Darth, no big deal. Sure, there were probably some repercussions. And I'm sure I haven't read all the expanded lore. I'm sure somebody knows that there's books probably been written about it. But this was my chance to get inside the head of what does a villain do when things didn't go according to his plan. Mm. And so that was kind of my challenge for this book, is to really kind of expand it out and look at different characters' points of views.
That's cool. I totally get that. I have a heist book with two characters. They put a crew together, and I just focus on like one city for it. But then book two, I was just going to have it just be one thing. But then book two, I was like, well, there's like a lot of cool stuff here. And then I was like, well, book two, you know, is like kind of set up to now be a trilogy. My friends are like, you just can't write a short story. It's your problem. And like, but they're like, but this sounds amazing. So now, yeah. So, but I totally get that. It's like, and I think it's good, because sometimes I'll read somebody's first book and they definitely bit off more they could chew, right? They're trying to put too many POVs in, and nothing's really, you know, you have all these little threads that are cool and maybe cool characters, but not really, you know, pulled together cohesively. So I think that's really smart on your part. A lot more people are saying that now when they're coming on here than in years past, I have to say, at least in my experience. And I think that's smart because I think if you do some things really well, right, like do a few things really well, people will read book two. But if you try to do a bunch of things not well, they're not going to read book two. I mean, it's just got to be the reality, I think, for any book, let alone, indie authors at this point. So I don't know. I personally, I think that you made a really good decision there. I'm just curious, like, because you said some really interesting things about different factions, and just had some really cool like world building just within these last two questions. So for that fifth one, so when it came to the world building and having to switch these kind of things from Everon, to your own world, what were some of the first things that you did to kind of, did you start from scratch or did you take some pieces and then kind of go from there? Was it an idea? Like, how did you do that actually?
No, it was all from scratch.
Oh,
And
wow.
what I had sat down one day and, I had the itch, I'm gonna write. So I wrote a whole chapter, but then I got to the end of the chapter and I'm like, okay, now I gotta write another chapter. And I'm started having all these questions. Well, but where is he and where are they and who are they going to? Who's the enemy? So I was like, I've got to know this stuff. So I just put it aside and I spent the next month just building my world. And I ended up, I call it like my world Bible. It's like a 60, 70 page document and it's continuing to grow. And I just started from a history. And I can't spoil it because I think I'm going to give the history in book three
Oh, cool.
of what happened to this world. But so I just started with a history. I have like 6,000 years of history, all the high points, these different wars, different events. And then I started just again as I was trying to keep the book smaller in scale. It's very much like those D&D type romps, like the Drizzt books or the Dragonlance. You've got the core adventurers, and so then I started focusing. Okay, well, I know I have these different areas and these different factions. Valadon is like the main city, the Virtuous Knights, and then I have the Vrogoths. They're my demonic creatures, and Rorgast is one of them, and they have their territory. And but I started thinking, okay, well, what are the areas? I have this kind of general history, and I have a page or two about each kingdom, kind of like you might find in a D&D source book. It gives a general like kind of what's the population, what's the general rulership like. But then, and this is something I think is important for a lot of fantasy authors who are just starting out, because I see this all the time when I talk to people, or even, I see different social media posts. People get bogged down in the world building. I'll see posts where people talk about, I've been building my world for 2 years. I'm like, 2 years? What? 3 years?
That's
4 years?
enough.
It's like, whoa, you need to stop and start writing your book. Like, at some point, you need to know stuff. But if I'm not going, like I have one area called the Gokaz Federation, and it's got these dog-like humans, and I have my one-page synopsis about the area, but they never go there. So why am I going to spend weeks or months detailing this whole area that never gets touched on in the book? So that would be my advice to authors, is really focus on the story you want to tell and try to figure out what are the important pieces to that story. Like you mentioned, you set it in your first book in a city, or one of your books kind of in a city. That's great. You probably want to know everything about that city, but you don't need to know about the city on the other side of the country, right? If it's never going there. So try to really, and then as you're building out and going maybe to the next book or the third book, you can start expanding things out. And but that would be my advice. Don't bite off more than you need to get going.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I actually have this book I pulled back out. It's I bought years ago. It's the Essential World Building Blueprint and Workbook by Scribeforge, and
Oh,
it's
cool.
amazing. Yeah, I'm gonna do a video on it because this actually got me through because I was like, it was asking me certain questions, and I actually got this from a podcast I used to listen to, and unfortunately, some podcasts from the pandemic just people stopped. Which is a real shame, I think. But yeah, these guys recommended, and they have there's a couple of these books too. But yeah, they do a great job of just really being like, for fantasy, sci-fi, and horror, really like asking you just the essential questions, and then allowing you to kind of go from there. And one of the questions actually is, where is your story set? And you kind of go, and then it's basically asking you, like, essentially, like trying to help you zone in on one location within this world. And I don't know, that mixed with a couple people that I interviewed really early on in season one, I think just really helped me to kind of, because that book I was just talking about was my first book I actually fully like wrote, like 78,000 words or whatever. I have to go back through and re-edit, but I was feeling things, right? Like, I just had too many random things. So yeah, and like I restructured the world building for the city and only mentioned certain things. Like there's an ale like bottle, like that's kind of like, oh, one of the ones that's in Forgotten Realms, right? That's like the best beer or whatever, or best elven wine. But like I thought, oh, that's gonna be one of the places they could go in book two. So I'm just kind of throwing a little bit of seeds in there. So this book actually, I think, helped me a lot with that. But yeah, I think it's really important to not get yourself bogged down, let alone bogging down, everybody else. Yeah, 'cause I think if it's not relevant to the characters, it really isn't relevant to your story. So it could be fleshed out later on if it's a place you want to go, in another book, like you've done, or something like that. So I don't know. I think that's really good advice personally, but
No, exactly. That's the thing. You can always flesh out more and expand more, but sometimes I worry for these authors that I hear that talk about spending so many years or whatever building their world, is that maybe it's a fear of actually getting started at writing the book.
oh, I
So
get
you
that.
just, yeah, you
Totally.
just keep like, well, no, I need to know what color the grass is, and is this, it's almost like you're grasping at straws to just keep building the world because you feel like you're not ready to tackle the book, and you got to trust yourself and go for it.
Yeah, and I was so much better at this last year. I always need like a fun project as I'm working on my actual one. When I'm struggling, and it hasn't worked recently because I've just been too busy. But yeah, I had at the time I was just like taking a break between. Oh, it was like I was taking a break between edits, and I was waiting on some people to. I think it was my alpha readers, and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna. I found a couple of cool characters that I thought were neat. Art always really inspires me, so I just found random art pieces, and all of a sudden I was like, well, what's this like Paladin like woman's story? I was like, what's this? And all of a sudden I like put it together, and I was like, oh, okay, so these are the classes, these are the people. I kind of wrote a little bit as exercises for those characters. Then from there, I was like, oh, this person's from this country. Like I got like a dwarf and stuff, right? And then I thought, oh, like how close would these different countries be? Because each person's from a different one, but they're all neighboring or touching or whatever. And then I was like, one day I was like, oh, I'll just do the map a little bit of just this area. And I did that. And then I thought, oh, like I went with organizations. Like I just kind of wrote each thing as like an exercise. And then one day I was like, this is going to be a really cool book, like series. And I started to just kind of draft out the first couple of chapters. I did the outline as another exercise for a couple of days, when I just needed something. And over the year, all of a sudden I had like really good notes. And a basic world, and organizations, a basic history that's like really cool, that I can go back to, when I'm done with my current projects, and I can kind of cycle back through. But it didn't take me. I was so proud of myself. I was like, this took me like a total of maybe 30 days versus say like same thing, right? Like 7 or 8 years to world build. So yeah, I think trying to find a way, I think that works for you, but don't be afraid to actually write. I think is like a really good advice. So it's really good advice. Now, speaking of writing, what are you most proud of when it comes to your characters or books and why?
We touched on it a little bit earlier. I like the fact that my two main characters, Grim, who is my barbarian ranger half scrawn, and then Vigilanten Vig, who is more of a roguish. He was a Valadian knight and he
Cool.
became a disgraced knight and kind of was kicked out of the knighthood, and that's all part of the story you'll read about in Relentless Blades. But I like the fact that despite flaws that they have, mistakes they may make, that at their core, they're good characters. So for me, this is a book that I'd happily share with people, especially boys, right? You hear all the time, you kind of talk about men don't read as much, or, you know, so yeah. I wanted characters in a story like I grew up with that I would have wanted to read or still want to read, where you have men being men, but they're good. They're trying to do the right thing. They're honorable. They may make mistakes. They may fall down, but they're going to pick themselves up. So I want that to be something that people can read the book. And even throughout any troubles they have, you're still dealing with morally good people.
I think that's really cool, first of all. And I totally agree. And I feel that's like this whole anti-hero thing. I'm like, I grew up on Chuck Norris. I grew up on Walker, mm-hmm. Texas Ranger. You know, you knew that if somebody harmed a woman, a elderly yeah. person, a veteran, or a child, like he would go and get them, right? You go and get them.
Yeah.
And you got to cheer on the good guy. So I think that, you know, I agree. I think when I discovered Dritz, I was like, holy cow, like complex character, right? Extremely flawed, but is trying to do the right thing. And I was like, I just really, like, as a middle school kid, you know, like I don't know. I really looked to R.A., like R.A. Salvatore, Elaine Cunningham, Richard Lee Byers. Yeah. I got to interview Richard. I was like, that was like one of my life.
That's cool.
It was amazing. I got to tell him, you're one of the like three main people that made me want to write. And he was like, please send me your book when you're done. I'm like, almost done. I can't wait. But yeah, like just getting to read, you know, heroes that are good, but are just, you know, human, whether or not they're human or not, right? But right. just people, you know, trying to do the right thing. I think that's why people still just love The Hobbit or, you know, yeah. Lord of the Rings so much, right? Is like, I think that's why Sam's character speaks to so many people in particular. So I don't know. I think that's a really cool and aspiring goal there, Russell. I think that's really neat.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I won't let us derail it too much. But, you know, I grew up when Star Wars first came out. And so Luke Skywalker is a hero. He made mistakes. He was a young kid, could be considered whiny at the beginning. But by the end, he was a morally good character, doing the right thing, believing in his father, even though his father had done terrible things. And then you fast forward to the sequel trilogy. And I think that's why a lot of us who grew up with that just really look at that, that that's not the Luke Skywalker we grew up with. That's not the hopeful person who's good and doing the right thing and would defend his friends. And so I think that we need these good, especially male role models who are good characters, good people, doing the right thing, falling down, getting back up, and still continuing forward.
Yeah, and it's like that. I think that, I don't think I've heard anybody explain it that well, actually, Russell. So I think that's actually a really great point, because if you read the books, which I read so many of,
yeah,
it's like I have to have read like, oh my gosh, like 300 books with Luke Skywalker is just this amazing paladin with the Force, you know, and you know, a couple of comics, right, where like Dark Empire or whatever, where he goes to the dark side for a bit or whatever, comes back. But like, I didn't really like that. But I think those are the two things, like, yeah, that really drove me nuts, because it's like, it's just the antithesis of the character. You tried to make a truly good hero and anti-hero, and like you said earlier, right, sometimes it just doesn't work, you know, they're just, it's not the right skin for them. And I think that that's a really valuable lesson for all of us to learn. Yep. So oh, and by the way, never do what they did with Finn. Okay, make the character great no matter who they are, because that's what you promised. Okay.
Yeah, and Finn could have been a fantastic character.
I agree. Now, speaking of fantastic characters, if you could go on an adventure with any fantasy character, who would you add to your party and why?
Well, you kind of stole my thunder, and I've already been touching on R.A. Salvatore. So I would have to say Drizzt, right? I mean, I grew up with him. Salvatore was probably the main driving force that propelled me to inspire me to want to be a writer. Read all of his books, love them. And so, yeah, I'd have to say Drizzt. I mean, and he's a character that you already mentioned. You know, he's flawed, but he's always trying to do the right thing and trying to be noble despite it all. And let's face it, he's got some cool battle scenes. I
Yeah.
only, you know, I try to write good battles, and people say my fight scenes are very cinematic. They praise them, but I am just the Padawan to Salvatore's fight scene master.
Yeah, Bob is like nobody writes a fight scene like Bob. Like, but I think it's
No.
good for all of us to aspire to, because one day
Yeah.
somebody will, and then it'll just be the next legacy. So, but I think that is that's a great one. Somebody asked me that a while back. I was like, there's too many for me to pick, so I took the easy way out and asked you instead, Russell. So,
Well, you can cycle through them. There's so many of them out you can choose from, right?
I think that's awesome. All right, now we're on our last question. Just want to make sure we got enough time for it. Do you have any news, updates, current projects, anything like that you can share with us before we head out for today?
Sure. I have obviously right now we have Relentless Blades out. We have Ashbound Oaths that just came out in November, and I am working hard at work on the trilogy finale right now. I
Oh,
am
awesome.
100,000 words into it. The first two books are each about 450-ish pages. I think that this trilogy finale is going to hit 500, I think, you know, and I'm feeling like that's okay for a finale to be a little bit longer than the first two. So I'm guessing I have another 30 or 40,000 words to
Oh, wow.
write on it. Was hoping maybe I'll get it out at the end of the year, but that all, as you know, in the author, right? That falls on, can you get the cover done right? How long do the edits take? Do you get beta readers? Do you get their feedback fast enough? All that kind of stuff plays in. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, so that's it. And then we talked briefly, I think, before we started. You know, hopefully after that, I may dive into some novellas because I think that's a cool thing.
Sold. Sold. I think you
I
should sell.
have the we already talked about, yeah, the Dog Walking Author channel. So yeah, definitely check that out. Gonna be hitting up a couple trade shows. I got a Comic Con coming up in March, I'll be going to, and then a book festival in April. So looking forward to those. And yeah, exciting stuff.
That's awesome. Super cool. Well, I want to remind everybody in our audience, whether this is your, first time or, hopefully you're watching all 5 seasons, all 52 episodes. But please make sure that, you're like me, and as soon as you read Relentless Blades and Ashbound Oaths, that you are, reviewing those products as soon as you can. I have my friend Ben Shankman. I'm actually doing a review for him right now, for his new book that's coming out. But we were just talking earlier today. I was running errands about, really like just going back over the importance of reviews. So we've talked about it for 5 seasons. Everybody knows, probably tired of me saying it, but I'm gonna keep saying it because it helps everybody out. So if you guys could continue to do that as an audience, Russell would appreciate it, I'd appreciate it, everybody in the community would appreciate it. So everybody, thank you so much. Russell, this has been awesome. I'm so glad we could chat. I can't wait to have you on to chat again. But yeah, if there's anything else I can do in the meantime, just let me know. As soon as I have a few books that I'm finishing off for ARC reviews. So I probably won't get to the other parts of my list because people just kind of had a lot of stuff, coming out summer and spring. So I'll probably be on books like yours on that section of my list around like April. But as soon as I, get the I post reviews right away. I'm also posting them on my website just so you and everybody else knows. So I'll be posting on the podcast site. It is in the description of this interview. And yeah, as soon as I get the video done, I'll post it and I'll send it to you. But if there's anything else we can do in the meantime, please let me know. My podcast group on Facebook, you and everybody else is always welcome. Reader, writer, whoever, listener, watcher, to post in there questions, products like, you have. But if there's anything else we can do in the meantime, please just let me know and, we'll get it out there for you.
Hey, well, like I said earlier to start this, thanks, Daniel. Really appreciate you having me on. It's been a blast. And I just thank you for all the tireless work you do for indie authors like me and
I
promoting the
appreciate it.
indie community because, you know, it's tough out there. And so we are thankful for people like you putting podcasts like this, guys like Chris the Bearded Book Beast, and you mentioned Mike Molman, and you know, all these fantastic indie podcasters who are giving us a chance and a voice to tell about our stories. So thank you.
Yeah, not a problem. Not a problem. Anytime. Well, Russ, I hope you have a great rest of the day, and I'm sure I'll talk to you soon on social media, my friend. Thank you so
I will.
much.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you.